Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 31.
Let's dive right in. We're looking at Journey to the West today, Chapter 31.
Yeah, the one titled Pigsy's Righteous Plea Stirs the Monkey King and all that. It kicks off with some serious drama.
It really does. Mm. You've got this core conflict right away. Sun Wukong's back home on Flower Fruit Mountain, and Pigsy shows up.
And there's immediate tension, isn't there? You can feel the history between them.
Definitely. It's like this brotherly clash, but it's happening because something really bad has gone down on their journey.
And Sun Wukong, he basically knows Pigsy's been complaining about him. Pigsy gets captured by Monkey King's own monkey followers.
Exactly. It's immediately kind of funny, isn't it? He's caught, and his first thought is basically, oh, well, this is it for me. They're going to kill me.
Right. That Hu Bull line, it's so fatalistic. So Pigsy, very dramatic.
Totally. It sets this tone, like, even though he's genuinely stuck, there's humor in his reaction.
And then Monkey King shows up, and he is not happy. He just launches into it. You worthless chaff. Why did you insult me?
Mm-hmm.
Pigsy, of course, denies everything.
That insult. But then comes the really wild part, this claim about his hearing.
Oh, yeah, the ears. Sun Wukong says if he pulls his left ear up, he can hear heaven.
And if he pulls his right ear down, he hears everything in the underworld, like the judge is doing accounts.
Yeah.
It's this amazing mythological boast.
It really emphasizes his power, doesn't it? Like, I know everything.
Yeah.
Sets up the power dynamic right away.
Exactly. It's this, you know, superhuman level versus poor Pigsy.
And Pigsy just crumples immediately on his knees, swearing, brother, I didn't insult you. If I did, may I chew my own tongue off?
Uh-huh, yeah. Classic Pigsy. Then he tries logic. Like, I just said, if you weren't going, I'd go tell the master myself. How would I dare insult you?
Like, it was just practical.
Yeah.
But Monkey King isn't buying it, is he?
Not at all. He's completely skeptical. He calls for the big sticks.
Oh, the threat. 20 blows to the ankles, 20 on the back.
And then I'll finish him off with my own iron staff.
Yeah.
It sounds brutal.
It really does, but knowing them, you kind of feel there's this layer of, well, maybe bluster, like brothers squabbling almost.
I think so. It highlights Monkey King's fierce side, but the context matters. Pigsy knows how to appeal to him, though.
Right. First he tries their master. Brother, please, for Master Tang's sake, let me off.
Doesn't quite land, so Pigsy escalates.
He pulls out the big guns. Okay, if not for the master, then for the Bodhisattva Guanyin's sake.
Yes. And that works. The text says Monkey King's anger softens by a third just hearing her name.
Shows how much respect he has for Guanyin.
Definitely respect. So Monkey King says, okay, fine. I won't beat you now, but tell me the truth. Is the master really in trouble, or are you just trying to trick me?
He suspects it's a ploy. You see his underlying worry for Tang Monk coming through, despite being angry at Pigsy.
Mm-hmm. And Pigsy's response is, well, interesting. He says, brother, no trouble, honestly. Just missed you.
Huh. Is that genuine, do you think? Or just another tactic?
It's hard to say for sure. Could be a bit of both, knowing Pigsy. But then Monkey King has this moment of honesty himself.
Right. He admits, my body's back here in my cave, but my heart is still with the scripture-seeking monk.
That master faces danger constantly. It shows, you know, despite everything, his loyalty to the mission is still there. Deep down, he's concerned.
Which seems to be the opening Pigsy needed.
Exactly. Pigsy basically says, okay, you got me. I was trying to trick you into coming back. I just didn't realize you were so perceptive. Now, please forgive the beating and let me explain properly.
Then the real reason starts to come out. He's clearly desperate.
And the story he tells. Wow. So after Sun Wukong left them, they were in the Black Pine Forest.
Right.
And the Tang Monk, well, he went off looking for food or alms.
As he does. Often leads to trouble, doesn't it?
It does this time. He stumbles upon this golden pagoda. But it's not a holy place. It's the Yellow Robe Demon's lair.
And boom! Just like that, the demon captures him. Swift. Shows you how powerful this demon is.
Yeah, and Pigsy and Sandy try to rescue him, but... Yeah.
But then there's this twist, right? Princess Bai Huaxu.
Oh, right. The princess from Boxiang Kingdom, she's also a captive there. And she actually helps the Tang Monk, gives him a letter to take to her father, the king.
A little bit of hope there. She's trying to work things from the inside, so the monk gets away with the letter.
Temporarily. He gets to the kingdom, the king reads the letter, and begs the disciples to rescue his daughter and defeat the demon.
Another rescue attempt? How does that go?
Not well. They try again, Sandy gets captured this time, and Pigsy barely escapes with his life.
So things are just spiraling downwards. Tang Monk captured, Sandy captured, Pigsy on the run.
And it gets worse. The demon shows up at the royal court, disguised as this handsome scholar.
Oh no.
Charms the king, tells a load of lies, and it This is crazy.
Yeah.
He uses magic to turn the Tang monk into a tiger.
Okay, that's a new level of cruel.
Takes away his voice, his whole identity.
Exactly, total chaos. And even the white dragon horse, you know, the third prince transformed, tries to help. He fights the demon, but the horse gets injured.
So the whole group is basically incapacitated or captured, except for Pigsy.
Right. Which brings us back to why he's finally gone to Flower Fruit Mountain.
And it's actually the injured white dragon horse who pushes him.
Really? What does the horse say?
Basically reminds him, look, our master's in serious trouble. You have to go find Sun Wukong. Forget your issues. He's the only one who can handle this. Appeals to that shared history, their duty.
But Sun Wukong's first reaction isn't...
annoyance.
About what?
That Pigsy didn't mention his name to the demon sooner. He's like, I told you if you got into trouble, just say my name. And Pigsy, well, he's clever in his own way. He sees this opening.
What does he do?
He plays right into it. He tells Sun Wukong, oh, I did mention you, but it just made the demon angrier.
Oh.
And then he lays it on thick, recounting all the horrible things the demon supposedly said about Sun Wukong.
Mm.
Stuff like, okay, rough translation.
It's basically, Sun Wukong, who's he? Why would I fear him? If he dares come here, I'll skin him alive, pull out his tendons, chew on his bones, eat his heart. Even if he's a skinny monkey, I'll chop him up and deep fry him.
Yikes. Okay, that's crossing a line. A very big line when talking about the great sage equal to heaven.
A huge line. You just don't talk about Sun Wukong like that. Especially not if you want to live long.
So if Sun Wukong hears this, what happens? Does he buy it?
Oh, he doesn't even question it. He just explodes. The pride is instantly wounded.
What's his reaction like?
The text says, Usha scratching his ears and cheeks, basically bouncing off the walls in fury. Pure, unadulterated rage. You can almost picture it. The legendary Monkey King losing his cool completely.
Absolutely. His reputation, his honor, it's everything to him. This is a direct challenge he cannot ignore. That's definitely the immediate catalyst here. The personal insult seems to overshadow everything else in that moment.
What does he say? Does he vow revenge?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Since this demon dares insult me, I have to destroy him. I'll go with you.
He brings up his past glories, too, right?
He does. He goes on, remember when I wrecked heaven? All the gods bowed down calling me great sage, and this thing dares curse me behind my back.
Wow.
Then he finishes, I'm going now, I'll catch him, tear him into a million pieces to avenge this insult, and after I'm done, I'll come right back here.
Notice he says avenge the insult first, then maybe implies rescuing the others, and he plans to come back to his mountain afterwards.
Exactly. His priority number one is settling this score. The rescue mission is almost secondary to clearing his name.
And Pigsy's reaction to the whole dramatic declaration of vengeance.
Pigsy, ever the pragmatist, just sees his chance. He doesn't care why Wukong is going, just that he's going.
What does he say? Something typically self-serving.
Pretty much. Right back, you got it. You just go catch that demon, get your revenge. After that, whether you come back to us or not, hey, that's totally up to you.
Huh.
The switch flips, he drops the fury, gets ready for battle.
Just like that, back in hero mode.
Yeah, and before he leaves, he talks to his monkey followers, tells them to look after the mountain, plant trees, promises he'll be back after the pilgrimage is done.
That's actually quite touching, isn't it?
It's a nice glimpse of that side of him. His connection to Flower Fruit Mountain is deep. Well, Pigsy, but he clearly knows how to push Monkey King's buttons. But what's really interesting is what Monkey King says.
Oh, right. He wants to cleanse himself first.
Yes. He says something like, I've picked up some demon K these last few days, and Master likes things clean. I'm worried he'll, you know, dislike me.
Wow. So even this incredibly powerful being is worried about, what, spiritual BO and his master's reaction?
Pretty much. It shows this hidden layer of respect, maybe even affection, for the Tang monk underneath all the rebellion.
That's a great insight. And the text even notes that Pigsy sees it too. He realizes Monkey King is being genuine, not just maneuvering.
Yeah, a rare moment of clarity for Pigsy, perhaps. Seeing past his own stomach for a second.
Maybe. So, yeah. Okay, Monkey King's back in. They head towards the monster's place. What do they find?
Well, first they spot this bright light.
The golden pagoda.
Exactly. A golden pagoda emitting light, the text says. And Pigsy's like, hey, isn't that the yellow robe monster's house? Sandy's still in there.
So Pigsy's still got his eyes on the prize, even after getting beaten earlier.
Seems so. But Monkey King, he doesn't just rush in. He's more cautious.
Right. He tells Pigsy, you hang back up here in the sky. Let me scout out the entrance first. See what we're dealing with.
Smart move. Josie's thinking tactically, not just relying on, you know, smashing things.
But what he finds at the door isn't the monster at all.
No, it's kids. Two little kids, maybe 8, 10 years old, just playing a game with sticks and balls.
Wild. And Monkey King's reaction?
Instantaneous. He basically doesn't care who they are, just grabs them by the hair and lifts them up.
Oof. No hesitation, just sees an opportunity, maybe.
That's how it reads. Pure pragmatism. Consequences. Worry about those later. It's kind of harsh, actually.
Yeah, a bit chilling. And the kids, obviously, they freak out.
Totally terrified. Screaming, crying the whole nine yards, which of course alerts everyone inside the cave.
The little demons run to the princess, saying someone's grabbed the young masters.
And that's the reveal, isn't it? These aren't just any kids.
Nope. Turns out those two children were born to the princess and the monster.
Okay, plot twist. Suddenly this rescue mission just got way more complicated, family involved.
Definitely. So the princess comes out, sees Monkey King holding her kids. She doesn't know who he is yet.
Right. She confronts him, basically saying, hey, I don't know you. Why'd you take my kids? Their dad's powerful. You mess with them. He won't let you off easy.
And that's when Monkey King lays his cards on the table.
Yeah, he goes, you don't recognize me? I'm Sun Wukong, Tang Monk's disciple. My brother Sandy's in your cave. Let him go. I give you the kids back. Two for one sounds like a good deal for you, doesn't it?
Wow. Talk about direct negotiation, using the kids as leverage, straight up.
It's bold. Ruthless, even. But faced with that, the princess doesn't really have a choice, does she?
Seems not. The text says she rushes inside, tells the guards to back off, and unties Sandy herself.
And Sandy's reaction when he finds out Monkey King is there.
Oh, it's incredible. The description is so vivid. It's like, pure bliss, like being drenched in nectar, his heart filling with dew, like finding treasure, just overwhelming relief and joy.
You really feel how desperate he was. So he sees Monkey King.
And just bursts out with, brother, you really fell from heaven. Please save me. Total gratitude.
Oh. But Monkey King wouldn't be Monkey King without a little teasing, right?
Huh. Never. Even now, he kind of ribs Sandy, says something like, you, Sandy, when Master was zapping me with that headband curse, did you ever speak up for me? Huh. All talk. If you're protecting Master, why aren't you on the road west? What are you doing just squatting here?
Classic Monkey King. Mixing affection with a bit of score settling, maybe. Or just reminding him of the mission.
Probably a bit of both. And Sandy. He just takes it.
Yeah, he's humbled. Basically says, brother, let's not dwell on the past. We messed up. Just, just get us out of here, please.
So Sandy's free. Now what? The monster's still out there.
Right. And Monkey King has a plan, a pretty wild one. Pigsy comes back into the picture here, too.
He greets Sandy with that bear with it line.
Yeah, quick little exchange. Then Monkey King explains the next phase.
And this involves the kids again, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Big time. He tells Pigsy and Sandy, right, you two fly over the palace in the precious Elephant Kingdom. Get up on the roof of the main hall.
Okay.
And then, he says, just chuck the kids down onto the white jade steps below.
He wants them to throw the children.
Yep.
That is extreme. What's the thinking there? Just pure provocation.
Seems so. Draw the monster out. Monkey King explains he doesn't want a big fight in the city. Too messy, clouds and dust everywhere, scares the locals and the court.
Right, avoid collateral damage. But still. Asking Pigsy and Sandy to do that, what's Pigsy's take?
Well, Pigsy initially sounds supportive. Like, okay, brother, whatever you need, we're your backup. Typical Pigsy trying to sound helpful.
Yeah, oh, there's always a but with Pigsy.
Exactly. He immediately pivots. He points out, quite reasonably, look, these kids are already terrified. They've cried themselves hoarse. If we throw them down, they'll probably die, turn into mincemeat.
He's not wrong.
And then, he says, you think the monster's just going to let us go. He'll want our heads. And you, meaning Monkey King, you'll be off somewhere, clean hands, no witness. Aren't you basically just setting us up? He calls him out. Got to admire Pigsy's self-preservation instincts. How does Monkey King counter that?
He's sharp back.
Yeah.
But also strategic. He tells them effectively, look, if he comes after you two, just fight him. But lead him back here. There's plenty of room for a battle here, and I'll be waiting to take him on.
Oh.
Okay, so it's a lure. You guys be the bait. Draw him out to the designated fighting zone where I'll handle him.
Pretty much. He's reassuring them he will step in, just not in the city and not until they bring the fight to him. And Sandy, what does he think?
Sandy seems more trusting or maybe just resigned. He just says, right, right, elder brother's got a point. Let's go.
So despite the risks, despite Pigsy's very valid concerns, they agree.
Yeah. Took the children away to carry out the plan. Sets things up for a major confrontation. Okay, so Sun Wukong gets to the cave, and right away he's met by Princess Bai Huaxu, but it's not the welcome you might expect. She doesn't see him as a rescuer, not immediately. She actually accuses him, suggests he broke a promise about her child.
Yeah, that's striking, isn't it? She's clearly not just passively waiting. She feels betrayed. Sun Wukong tries to explain, saying he took the child to see his grandparents on the mother's side, which, from his viewpoint, sounds okay, maybe even thoughtful.
Perhaps, but her reaction is really strong, especially when she feels he's criticizing her filial piety, her duty to her parents. She defends herself, talks about her royal upbringing, her learning. She even quotes this line, "Huo Xia."
Wow, what did that mean exactly?
It's powerful. Among the 3,000 types of punishment related to the five main penalties, none is greater than unfilial piety. It just hammers home how central that concept, respecting your parents, was. It's core Confucian thinking, really.
Right, so that explains the intensity. And Sun Wukong, well, he doesn't back down, does he?
Not a chance. He comes back with his own definition of filial piety. He quotes another passage. "AUU, basically, father bore me, mother raised me. Alas, my parents, you worked so hard raising me. So filial piety is the root of all good actions."
And then he turns it on her.
Right. He directly accuses her of being unfilial, says she's living with this demon, not thinking about her own parents. It's pretty blunt.
Oof, yeah, that sounds harsh. How does she take it?
The text says she's deeply ashamed, face flushed, tears. It hits hard. And then she explains her side. It's quite moving, actually. She talks about being abducted 13 years ago. The demon watches her constantly. She couldn't get word out. And crucially, she feared that if she, took her own life,
Oh, right.
it would be seen as deserting her parents, another failure of filial piety.
So she's trapped, utterly trapped by the situation and by these deep cultural expectations. A real catch-22.
Exactly that. It's not just physical captivity. And Sun Wukong, he does know a bit more context. Zhu Baji had told him about a letter the princess wrote.
Ooh, letter.
Yeah, one that actually helped save their master, Tripitaka, earlier. And in that letter, she expressed how much she missed her parents. So Sun Wukong knows her heart is in the right place, despite appearances.
Okay, so that probably influences his next move.
Definitely. He makes her this offer, a big one, he says. Essentially, "I'll capture the demon, take you back to court, find you a good husband, and make sure you can serve your parents again." He's offering her a complete restoration of her life.
You'd think she'd jump at that.
Well, her first reaction is actually doubt, skepticism. She looks at Sun Wukong, and the description is fantastic. She calls him a thin ghost with more tendons than muscles, like a crab with its bones on the outside.
Huh. Not exactly flattering.
Not at all. She asks how he, looking so frail, could possibly succeed when his bigger, stronger-looking companions failed. It's a great moment about judging books by covers.
And Sun Wukong's reply must be good.
Oh, it's classic Monkey King. He uses this amazing analogy. "A bladder might be big, but it weighs nothing. A small steelyard weight can press down 1,000 pounds."
Nice. So appearances aren't everything.
Precisely. And then he lays into his companions, calls them big and useless, says they're just good for resisting wind when walking, wasting cloth for clothes, soft in the head and waist, and useless at eating. He really doesn't mince words.
He certainly doesn't. Brutal honesty there.
And then contrasts it with himself. "Andrew Serez, old son, I might be small, but I have sinews and joints, real inner strength."
Love that. But the princess, she's still not totally sold.
Takes a bit more convincing. He has to reassure her again, "Trust me, I'm good at this demon subduing stuff." Then he asks her to hide. He wants to face the demon alone, without her presence complicating things, especially given, well, their history.
The 13 years she's been forced to be with him.
Right. And she clarifies again, "Udishi, my staying here is only because I have no choice." Sun Wukong acknowledges that, knows it's been a long time, but promises he's going to fight the demon seriously to get her back.
And there's that line in the text, isn't there? Something about her fate.
Yes, as a predestined connection or fate with the demon is ending, all because Sun Wukong has arrived. It signals a real shift. Okay, so while Sun Wukong is having this quite sensitive conversation,
Zhu Baji and Shamunk are up to something very different.
very different, and frankly, quite shocking. They've taken the demon's two children to the palace in Benxian Guo, and what they do next is, well, it's brutal.
Yeah, the description is graphic. They throw the children down the palace steps, the white jade steps. Chi-poo-choo! It's startlingly violent.
It really is. The court officials see it happen. They cry out, "Chiri, chiri." Meanwhile, the demon himself is still back at the palace.
Yeah, nursing a hangover, apparently. He hears his name being shouted outside. He's confused. How are Baji and Xiao Meng here? He thought he left Xiao Meng tied up. How could they have his kids?
He smells a trap.
Exactly. He thinks it's a trick.
Cat.
He suspects Baji is trying to lure him into a fight while he's still feeling unwell, hungover. He's worried about looking bad if he fights when he's not at his peak.
So his pride gets in the way. What does he do? He decides not to confront them there. Instead, he'll sneak back to his cave first, check if those really were his kids they threw down, and crucially, he slips away without telling the king he's leaving.
Ah, and that's a mistake.
Right.
Because the court already suspects him.
Big mistake. The narrative points out the court already knows he's a demon. Some palace maids had survived and told the king. So his sudden disappearance just confirms everything. He basically blows his cover completely.
And while he's sneaking back to his cave, Sun Wukong is planning his own welcome party.
You could say that. Sun Wukong uses his transformation skills, takes on the exact appearance of Princess Bai Huaxu, and heads back into the cave to wait for the demon. Classic Sun Wukong deception. When the yellow robe monster gets back to his cave.
And his return is basically Sun Wukong's cue. Showtime.
Oh, totally. And what a show. The text describes him just like bawling, tears like rain, it
He's
says.
stamping his feet, beating his chest.
Yeah.
It's pure melodrama. Can you even picture the Monkey King doing this?
It's brilliant, though. The monster, completely fooled, comes over to his disguised wife and is like, honey, what's wrong?
And Sun Wukong launches into this totally made-up story. Get this. He claims Pigsy has run off not just with Sandy, but with her kids.
And the story is that Pigsy's taking them all to see their, quote, maternal grandfather at court.
It's genius. Sun Wukong pretends he's just devastated about these kids and because the monster wasn't there to protect them.
And the monster, he bites hook, line, and sinker. He gets instantly furious.
Especially about his kids. It's amazing how Sun Wukong plays on that possessiveness, that emotion.
It really is. Shows how even powerful beings can be manipulated, you know, if you find the right lever.
Definitely. So the monster's all riled up, but he wants to comfort his supposedly heartbroken wife.
Right, so he offers him a treasure, something to soothe the pain.
And here's where it gets even stranger. The monster actually warns him, or, well, warns the disguised Sun Wukong. Don't touch it with your thumb. Says it'll reveal his true form or something.
It's almost comical, isn't it? Like he's practically giving Sun Wukong instructions on how to expose him later.
You can just imagine Sun Wukong inside thinking, okay, noted.
So the monster leads him deeper into the cave to some secret spot, and then he literally spits out this treasure.
Spits it out.
Yeah. It's described as being like a chicken egg, glowing, really radiant, and it has this grand name, Shilizinlongneden.
The Shira Relic Exquisite Inner Pill sounds important.
Oh, it is. It's basically the super concentrated ball of spiritual energy and power, something that takes like ages of meditation and refinement to create. The text even mentions Sun Wukong thinking about the effort involved, how many meditation sessions, how many years of tribulations.
So this isn't just some random shiny object. It's the monster's core power source, almost.
Pretty much, yeah. A huge deal. And Sun Wukong, still playing the part, takes this incredibly valuable pill and then just deliberately flicks it with his finger.
Just flicks it.
Yep. And the monster, predictably, freaks out, tries to grab it back.
Too late.
Way too late. In that instant, Sun Wukong just pops it in his mouth and swallows it. Gone.
Oh, man. Talk about raising the stakes. The monster must have lost it.
Absolutely. He throws a punch, totally enraged. Sun Wukong, of course, just blocks it easily.
And then the big reveal.
Exactly. A quick wipe of the face and poof, the disguise melts away. There stands the real Sun Wukong.
And he doesn't mince words, does he? Monster, don't be rude. Take a good look and see who I am.
It's such a powerful moment, but the monster's brain is still catching up. He's actually still calling Sun Wukong wife.
Seriously, even looking right at him.
For a second, yeah, until Sun Wukong lays into him. You vile monster, who is your wife? You don't even recognize your ancestor. That must have stung.
Ancestor, he really goes there.
He does, and the monster starts to clue in, like, hang on, I think I kind of recognize you.
About time, then come the accusations, right? You tricked me. You stole my treasure.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not wrong, is he?
Fair point. Sun Wukong totally did trick him and steal his inner pill.
But Sun Wukong just owns it, declares loud and proud, I am Tang San Zhang's eldest disciple, called Sun Wukong. I am your ancestor from 500 years ago.
Bold claim. How does the monster react to that?
Disbelief, mostly. He's like, wait, I thought Tang San Zhang only had two disciples, Pigsy and Sandy.
Ah, so Sun Wukong needs another story.
And he's ready. He explains, oh yeah, well, I got temporarily banished. Master's too compassionate, see? I killed too many monsters. It kind of subtly reinforces his own reputation, too.
I'm the one who actually gets things done.
Pretty much. But the monster sees an angle, gets sarcastic. Oh, you got kicked out, so why are you even showing your face here?
Good question, actually.
But Sun Wukong has the perfect answer. Talks about the unbreakable bond between master and disciple, his duty to rescue Tang San Zhang. And then he adds, plus, Pigsy told me you were insulting me.
Ooh, making it personal. Did the monster actually insult him?
He denies it, of course. Blames Pigsy, calls him a gossip. Typical deflection.
But Sun Wukong's not interested in debating. He cuts right through it.
Yeah, he basically says, all right, playtime's over. Offer up your head. My staff could use a cup of tea. Using the staff as the teacup, you know.
Dark.
Yeah.
And menacing. How does the monster take that?
He just laughs. He's suddenly confident again. Boasts about all his demon followers. Like, I've got legions inside and out. You're surrounded.
Underestimating the Monkey King again. Big mistake.
Huge. Sun Wukong's basically like, bring him on. I can handle any number. Just pure defiance.
And the monster calls his bluff. Or thinks he's calling a bluff.
Yeah, he immediately orders all his demons, block the doors, seal the cave.
Which is exactly what Sun Wukong wanted, wasn't it?
Seems like it. He's described as being delighted. This is his element. And then he transforms.
Oh, yeah.
Three heads, six arms, holding three of his golden hooped staves. Battle mode activated.
Okay, now we're talking. So he just wades into them?
Wades in, doesn't quite cover it. The text uses these really vivid similes, like a tiger entering a flock of sheep, an eagle swooping into a chicken coop.
Total destruction.
Utter chaos. It says the smaller demons are just crushed, torn apart. It's brutal.
But the main target, the yellow robe monster.
He manages to slip out during the mayhem, gets outside the cave, and starts taunting Sun Wukong like, hey, stop bullying my guys.
As if Sun Wukong cares about the minions.
Exactly. Sun Wukong basically calls him out, come on then, let's actually fight.
And so the real duel begins.
Yep. Up on the mountaintop, classic setting. Iron staff versus steel saber. Clouds, mist, the whole epic scene.
And the writing really contrasts them, right? Sun Wukong's divine power.
Versus the monster's demonic skill with the blade. One fighting for his master's quest, the other defending his evil domain.
It ends that section with those really powerful lines, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Capturing the scale of it all.
Yeah. The great sage's divine power is vast. The demon's skill is high. Disregarding life and death, they fight in the air, all for Tang Sanzang's distant pilgrimage to Buddha. Really sets the stakes.
Wow. What a sequence.
Totally. But what I found really interesting in the source was how Wukong's, like, observing during the fight. He's actually thinking about the monster's weapon, noticing it's on par with his own staff. It's almost like he's taking mental notes mid-combat.
That's a fantastic point. Really shows his experience, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He's not just swinging wildly. He's analyzing, assessing.
Yay.
He clocks that this isn't just some random thug. And that suspicion sets up everything that follows. And his move, that high-probing horse's stance, that's pure strategy.
Mm.
He's deliberately creating an opening.
And it works. The monster takes the bait, goes low, and bam, Wukong counters. Upward block.
Yeah.
Then that leaf-bottom peach strike. You can almost feel it.
Wow.
But then, nothing. Zilch. The monster's just gone. No mess, no body. And Wukong's first thought isn't, huh? It's more like, okay, something supernatural just happened. Deep suspicion, right away.
That's the key, isn't it? The completeness of the disappearance. Because even powerful demons usually leave some kind of trace in this world. So the fact that there's absolutely nothing, it strongly suggests, well, not mortal, maybe celestial origin.
Yeah, it changes the whole game.
It really does. It elevates the conflict immediately.
And Wukong, he doesn't hang around wondering. He gets properly mad and makes a beeline straight for the southern gate of heaven. Now, you got to remember, he's got a bit of a reputation up there.
Oh, absolutely. Caused quite the ruckus in the past.
So how do the guards react when he just shows up?
Well, that's what's so interesting.
What?
These aren't just any guards, right? Pang, Lu, Gu, Bi. These are significant figures.
Yeah.
But the text says they show fearful deference. They actually bow and let him straight through. No questions asked.
Wow.
It speaks volumes, doesn't it? About the lasting impression he made, the respect, or maybe just the sheer fear he still commands.
He doesn't waste a second, does he? Marches right up to the four great celestial masters and basically demands, who's missing? Who's the demon messing with my master, Danabaxiang?
Uh-huh, yeah. No pleasantries.
Not at all.
That's pure Wukong. Cuts right through the bureaucracy. And it also shows his confidence, right? He expects answers from these top-tier celestial guys. He knows he needs help from up high for this one.
And they take him seriously. They go straight to the Jade Emperor, and bam, full celestial investigation kicks off. We're talking 9 planets, 12 earthly branches,
All the constellations.
east, west, north, south, center, deities of mountains, rivers. It's like the ultimate cosmic headcount.
It really highlights the strict hierarchy up there
Yeah.
and how serious it is if a celestial being steps out of line. The fact that they check everyone just shows how unusual it is for someone to be missing.
And the missing one is Kumulang, also known as the Kritika star.
Bingo.
Everyone else present and accounted for, but not him. And where is he? Hiding. Down in some mountain stream, trying to hide his demonic aura because he's scared of Wukong from the old rebellion days.
That's so revealing, isn't it? First, it confirms Wukong was the celestial connection. Second, it shows Wukong's power is still, feared even among the stars. And third, it pretty much screams that Kublai knows he's done something wrong. He's hiding for a reason.
He only pops out when he hears the special celestial call. And guess who's waiting right there at the gate?
Wukong, ready for round two?
Yep. Luckily for Kumulang, the other stars jump in before it gets messy.
Yeah, you can see that a couple of ways.
Yeah.
Maybe they feel responsible for one of their own.
Could be.
Or maybe they just don't want the kind of chaos Wukong tends to bring. Either way, they manage to de-escalate things for the moment.
So Kumulang gets hauled before the Jade Emperor, and here's the twist he fesses up. Hands over a golden tablet, basically admitting guilt. And then we get the story.
The backstory.
Yeah. The Princess of Boxiang, Bai Huaxiu, she wasn't just a princess originally, a jade maiden, serving incense in the Palace of Fragrance up in heaven.
Whoa.
And she and Kuimulang, they apparently had a thing going on.
Okay, that changes everything.
Yep.
Suddenly, it's not just a monster kidnapping, it's celestial romance, a shared desire for mortal life.
Seems like it.
The Jade Maiden wanted to come down to Earth, and Kugulang was involved somehow. There was clearly a connection before all this.
And get this, it wasn't just a fling. They were apparently destined to be husband and wife down on Earth for 13 years.
Ah, the preordained fate angle.
Exactly. Seems like this whole thing was sort of written in the stars, literally.
That's a classic theme in these stories, isn't it? Makes you think about free will versus destiny.
So, what happens to Kuimulang? Celestial justice time. The Jade Emperor hears the confession, takes away his golden tablet status symbol, and basically demotes him. He's reassigned to tending the fire for Lao Tzu in the Tushita Heaven. But, and this is interesting, he still gets paid, and there's a chance he could get his old job back eventually.
So it's discipline, but with a path to redemption.
Yeah.
It really shows how the celestial bureaucracy works, doesn't it? There are
Yeah.
procedures, even for misbehaving stars. It's structured. He has to do his time, basically.
And Wukong, how does he react to all this? He's surprisingly chill about it, just gives a casual wave of goodbye to the other gods, which apparently the celestial masters find kind of funny, maybe because he just doesn't care about all the heavenly pomp and circumstance.
Probably. And the Jade Emperor is likely just sighing with relief that it's over without Wukong smashing anything else.
Wukong's just focused on getting back to his master.
Absolutely. His priority is Tang San Zhang, the celestial court drama. Not really his concern once the immediate threat is gone. His casual exit just underlines his unique relationship with the powers that be up there.
So, crisis averted in heaven. Wukong zips back down to the cave, finds the princess, and tells her the whole crazy story. Your kidnapper. Yeah, he's actually a star god you used to know.
Imagine hearing that.
Right. And just then, who bursts in? Pigsy and Sandy, all fired up, ready to fight the monster.
Gotta love their enthusiasm. Always ready for a brawl.
Wukong has to be like, guys, stand down. Monster's gone. Long story.
It's a nice little moment showing their different personalities, isn't it? Pigsy and Sandy are all action, while Wukong solved it differently.
Then Sandy, always the practical one, says, hey, let's just use that shrinking earth trick and get the princess home fast.
Good old Sandy. Sensible.
No fuss, no muss. And zip, she's back in the palace, reunited with her folks, and probably telling them this unbelievable tale about the Monkey King.
Sandy's practicality is often the counterbalance in the group, isn't it? Compared to Pigsy's impulsiveness or Wukong's sometimes dramatic solutions. And getting the princess back quickly shows how useful their powers can be.
So the king, he obviously wants the full story. This yellow robe guy. What was that about?
And Monkey King just drops this bombshell. He says, well, this monster, he's actually Kuixing, a star deity, and the princess, a jade maiden from heaven. He talks about their past life connection, basically. The Jade Emperor checks the records, sees Kui Xing has missed celestial roll call 4 times.
And how long down on Earth?
That's the kicker. One day up there is a year down here, so 4 roll calls. That's 13 years he's been AWOL, living as this monster husband.
13 years. Okay, so the Emperor's not happy.
Definitely not. It's a serious transgression. So he immediately orders some celestial constellations to go down, grab Kui Xing, and take him to the Tsuchida Palace for punishment. Justice is swift, if a bit bureaucratic.
But he's still really worried about Tang Sanxing.
And that brings us back to the main quest, doesn't it? The monk's safety is paramount.
Back at court, and there's Tang Sanxing.
He's in a really bad spot. Trapped in a cage, and worse, he's been hit with some kind of magic yunch. He looks like a tiger.
So he's been enchanted.
Exactly. The text makes it clear he's still himself inside, conscious, but totally paralyzed. Can't speak, can't move.
Paralyzed by magic. Pretty awful situation.
Yeah, it's a stark reminder of how vulnerable he is despite everything and how much he relies on his disciples. You could almost say it's like payback for doubting Wukong earlier. And
ooh, interesting point. Wukong, being Wukong, can't resist teasing him a little. See? Told you so. Look at you now. That kind of thing.
Gentle ribbing.
But then Pigsy actually pipes up, asks for some compassion, and Sandy respectfully asks Wukong to help.
He uses that proverb, sort of like, do it for the bigger picture, even if you're annoyed with the guy himself. Spare the monk for the Buddha's sake. Plus, Sandy adds the practical point. They can't actually handle this magic themselves. They need monkey.
And Wukong, despite the jokes, he's instantly ready to help. Tells Pigsy, go get the purple gold alms bowl, fill it with water. Specific instructions. Sounds like a ritual.
Mm-hmm. That bowl, the incantation, it highlights the magic in their world and Wukong's specific skills.
He says the words, sprays the water on the paralyzed master who looked like a tiger, and poof, spell broken. Tang Sanxing is back to normal.
Instantly restored.
And he's incredibly grateful. Really thanks Wukong sincerely, acknowledges how crucial he is, even predicts great things for him in the future.
That feels like a real turning point in their relationship, doesn't it? Tang Sanxing finally fully getting just how indispensable Wukong is.
Yeah.
But Monkey King's response is, well, his only request, he says, is please, please don't recite that tight filet curse the Sazen anymore. That's all he wants.
Yeah. Freedom from that headache is worth more than any praise.
Exactly.
The king is thrilled, throws a big vegetarian feast for them, and then it's formal goodbyes as they finally get back on the road west.